Another 3-2. This one sprayed the other way. That one's deep. That ball's gone. Jacoby Jones pushes the Tigers in front. It's now 5-4 as he wears a crown again on a Wednesday night to lead the Tigers hitting attack.
Yeah, the Royals, it was fun while it lasted that first game. 6 home runs, 14 runs, and now they lost 2 in a row to the Tigers. Danny Duffy was good for a while and then kind of imploded. And that's kind of been the MO for Danny Duffy throughout most of his career. It looks like one of the best pitchers in the league, but can't do it over an extended period of time. Had a stint in his career where he was really good out of the bullpen. Maybe that's the best place for him. But somebody's got to start for the Royals. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to start, and Duffy is their number one starter with Keller and Junis and Montgomery not available. And here's Mike Matheny on Duffy in that bad inning where the Royals had the lead. They were up 4-0 and couldn't hold it, or Duffy couldn't hold it.
It just looked like it was going to be one of those days where everything was clicking for him. And I think it really was, you know, unfortunately, you know, that leadoff walk, which once again, those have scored on a very high percentage against us this year. And that just kind of opened up the door for things to go bad. And, you know, really surprised the one in right actually got out. Thought we were going to walk out there with a 2-run lead. And, but I thought Dan did a really good job. Stuff looked right tonight. Unfortunately, the one inning got away. Now one inning has been biting us lately.
Jacoby Jones with a home run. You heard the game winter in the 7th as the Royals were up 4-0 going into the bottom of the 3rd. Tigers at 1 in the 3rd, 3 in the 5th to tie it, and then 1 in the 7th off Ian Kennedy to win it. 5-4. Tigers just 4 hits, but they win. Royals out hit them 9-4. Didn't matter. Franco with 3 hits and 2 RBIs. He's swinging a hot bat now in Detroit. And Whit Merrifield, maybe he's the guy that's going to hit 400 in the short season. He's hitting 391. He was 2-for-4 last night with 2 runs scored, but it was all for naught. And Alberto Mondesi was moved from the top part of the lineup to the 6th spot. He had a triple last night for the Royals, but the Royals do fall, and they're now 2-4 on the season. And the boys in blue will be at it again coming up today. Brady Singer, that's probably been the biggest bright spot, him and Whit Merrifield so far this season. Brady Singer with his first start with 5 innings, gave up 2 runs and struck out 7. He'll be in Detroit. Tigers now 4-2. Ivanova on the hill for the Tigers. Brady Singer, his second Major League Baseball start tonight at 6:10 there in Detroit. All right, K18 Baseball, the team that knocked us out in the regional round, is the state champion.
Yes, Clay Center, champions last night. Had a little bit of a lightning and rain delay in the middle of it, but they ended up with a win 7-4 over Norton. So Clay Center, the champions of K18 here for 2020. Washington beat Waukini 7-0 in the 3rd-place game. So both winners last night came from the East region. Again, Clay Center, your champion. And if you want to go back and look at all the results from K18 State Baseball or Pee Wee State Baseball as well, you can visit ncksports.com.
Have you noticed since Patrick Mahomes became owner of the Royals, they've lost?
Yeah,
they're 0-2 with Mahomes as part owner. Apparently Mahomes needs a pitch. That's what we need. So the whole little dust-up between the Dodgers and the Astros, this cracks me up. This stuff is just too hilarious to make up. So if you didn't see what happened, Joe Kelly didn't hit anybody.
No.
Now, he threw at a couple of Astros, threw behind them, but he didn't hit anybody. The Astros have been, in essence, convicted of cheating. And didn't get any L's put on their record or suspensions. I mean, the manager is not there anymore. The players haven't been suspended. So Joe Kelly received an 8-game suspension in Major League Baseball. Now, you may say 8 games. So, yeah, that's not that bad. Excuse me. It is bad when you only play 60 games. This is so funny. Here's some of the comments. Joe Kelly just got 8 games for a couple of pitches. That's like 22 games in a regular season, the equivalent during a regular season when we had 162 games. Yet somehow the Houston Astro players got 0 games for actually cheating the game. Insanity. Dave Roberts, manager of the Dodgers, was suspended for a game for his pitcher not hitting anyone with a pitch. Joe Kelly, if he didn't want to be suspended, he should have just cheated like the Astros. So instead of throwing at somebody, you should have just cheated and he'd still be pitching today. Now they're making up these T-shirts and stuff, and they're going to have a batting practice tonight. And I mean, the Dodgers having fun with it. Joe Kelly on the front.
Yeah.
Joe Kelly says, "I apologize to no one." I thought that was pretty funny.
His Instagram post was very funny.
Yes, it was. You have to see it to really get it all. Yeah. But yeah, I thought that was pretty good stuff. So we'll continue to see teams probably looking for retribution against the Astros since they were, in essence, convicted of cheating. But then there's no suspensions for any of the players because they got immunity because it's a talk about the whole situation. And I do think 8 games is too severe, in my opinion. But, especially in a short season. But it is what it is. I'm sure he'll appeal it, and maybe he can work it down. Sad news out of Wichita. This is really sad stuff. The guy that's responsible for bringing minor league baseball to Wichita, the Wind Surge owner Lou Schweckheimer, he died yesterday at the age of 62 of COVID-19, or so they say. You know, nowadays when you hear
complications due to COVID-19.
You know, did he have other issues and COVID-19 was the final straw? I have no idea. You'd have to investigate every case individually to find out. But he passed away, according to the story, of COVID-19 at the age of 62. So he never even got to see one game played at the new stadium that he made possible there in Wichita because COVID-19 not only ruined the season and having games with a surge, but it, according to this story, helped kill the owner. Man, what a sad story. 62.
Yeah, I just can't imagine like what that's been like to go through everything, and now you add that for that family.
Not a good start for the Wind Surge down there in Wichita, but it'll work out eventually. But man, I was asked this question: if nobody knew there was a coronavirus. If nobody knew there was coronavirus, would we just be like somebody got sick, they got ill, they got the flu, and they died? If we didn't know that it was a unique virus, you know, if we didn't know there was such a thing as coronavirus, would we just say it was a bad case of the flu? This was proposed to me and asked to me, and they said they'd be interested in us saying something about it. I don't know. I never thought about that. We didn't know it was coronavirus.
So
we had more people dying from the flu, but we'd investigate it and eventually find out it's a different strain of flu.
Yeah.
So I think we'd eventually get to that point anyway. But, but would we, had we not known it for a couple more months? Well, yeah, there could have been people that passed away in February, that, as far as we know, in January, that had COVID.
Yeah. And
and we would have just moved on like our lives are normal. There wouldn't have been quarantines. There wouldn't have been stoppage of sports, and school wouldn't have been stopped in March by the state of Kansas. If it kept rolling that way, and today we would, but the thing is, we would eventually investigate and we'd look into it and we'd find out, just like we have, back in March, that, hey, this is COVID-19 that struck our country, so we eventually would figure it out. So I guess it's a really tough question to answer, because eventually you would know it's something different, because 150,000 deaths today is the number that they tout, which, you know, I don't know. Once again, how many of those are really, truly COVID-19 caused? I have no idea.
Yeah.
But still, when you look at it, if nobody knew there was coronavirus, if nobody knew, we'd just keep living our lives, and we'd be probably saying, they had a bad case of the flu and they died. Now, the thing that would really stand out if a lot of younger people were dying from it.
Yeah.
Then guess what you do? You'd investigate it, and you find out, it's a different strain. So I think it's a very difficult question to answer.
It presents different than the flu for a lot of people, too, because I think a lot of people will probably not have the same symptoms as a flu, per se. It'd be an upper respiratory infection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'd be like, that's what they'd call it. They wouldn't even know it was a flu. They wouldn't even call it
true.
A flu. They'd call it a
that's
respiratory
true.
Infection.
Right, probably so.
For those severe cases that end up on ventilators or end up in the hospital or whatever.
Right.
It just presents different for different people. So you just never know what you'd call it and what it would be. So, yeah, it is a very tough question to answer and say, obviously, if we didn't know something was going on and what it was,
we would keep living our lives like we didn't know it was there.
Just keep living.
Yeah, no doubt. So anyway, that was posed to me today. All right. we talked about it the other day, NFL players starting to opt out. And when Tardif opted out, I think we said odds are he won't be he's the first NFL player to opt out. He won't be the last. And I believe we said that there'll probably be another chief or two that'll opt out as well. Yesterday certainly came as a surprise to me. Damian Williams has opted out. Damian Williams would have got $1.85 million. His contract will toll to the 2021 season. He'll receive $150,000 advance on his salary with the opt-out clause, with the new agreement between the NFLPA and the NFL in regards to the upcoming season. And of course, Damian Williams could have easily been the Super Bowl MVP. Had a 5-yard touchdown catch. He had the 38-yard touchdown run that'll be remembered forever by Chiefs fans that sealed the deal in Super Bowl 54. Had a 711 yards from scrimmage, 7 touchdowns in the regular season. So with Williams stepping away and opting out, and he's 28 years of age, by the way, the Chiefs have first-round pick Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which means that he'll probably, he had over 1,000 yards rushing last year at LSU and over 50 catches. So can he handle the workload? You would say probably, but it is a rookie, and NFL is a different level of football. They have DeAndre Washington, who they picked up as a free agent. So that's going to give him a chance to make this team. And it's also going to give Darrell Williams a chance to make this team. Mm-hmm. And then there's Darwin Thompson, who I think is more of a scat back. So those are the running backs. The Chiefs still have depth at the running back position, but Williams wasn't a guy that could get through the whole season unscathed. He missed some time with injuries the last couple of years, but man, he's been clutch in the postseason.
Absolutely.
So that's something. If there is an NFL season and Chiefs make it to the playoffs, he will be missed. And I think he'll be missed much. I think he'll be missed much more than Tardif myself. I think the Chiefs can replace Tardif a lot easier, and I think they can replace Williams. I think they'll still be fine, but I do think of the two players that is going to be more of a hit for the Chiefs. I do believe it'll be Williams because of his experience in the system, the block schemes, and then he's just a gamer when it comes to big games. He's been that way the last few years.
Yeah. I mean, postseason touchdown production compared to regular season is a little bit is different. Obviously, like you said, he does suffer some injuries every now and then during the regular season. But, he's been huge, especially last year in the postseason.
Yep. Could have been a Super Bowl MVP. Some people thought he should have been. The Chiefs signed a 25-year-old safety the other day. That's Tedrick Thompson. Remains to be seen if Juan Thornhill will be ready to practice day one, and Thompson could be insurance for that scenario. Thompson has primarily played deep in his career, deep safety with the Seahawks, and the Chiefs will allow him to play there as well. He's an experienced player with 16 starts in his three-year NFL career. He's only 25, and he'd be a strong candidate to fill in the absence of Thornhill if he's not able to come all the way back and ready to go right away from the torn ACL he suffered late last season. Thompson was a starter for the Seahawks at free safety his second year. Finished his tenure with Seattle, 80 tackles, 3 interceptions. He's inconsistent in coverage, but he does have some experience. He's still young, and he had a season-ending shoulder injury last year, and we'll see if he's recovered from his labrum surgery. So the Chiefs get some insurance at safety with Thornhill, you know, not knowing what's going to happen with him. And that makes sense. I mean, you know, a young guy, you're taking a one-year deal on him, a flyer on him, had some depth in the secondary. I think it makes total sense. In fact, I'd rather have a 25-year-old than a 35-year-old.
Don't get out like some old veteran and try to make it work. I mean, that's what you got. It's better to take a younger guy.
No doubt. Let's go back to Damian Williams. Brad Veach said in a statement, the general manager of the Chiefs, as an organization, we certainly understand and respect Damian's choice, knowing it was made in the best interest of his family. He means a lot to our football team as a player and a person, and we're going to miss having him around this season. Now, there was an interesting article. Our webmaster, Derek, shared this with us from CBSSports.com. What players opting out now says, you know, I've said this for a while, and you've been in agreement with me, and we've had a little bit of fun with it at times because it's very easy for all of us that don't play professional sports to say these guys should play. They're young. You know, they get COVID, they'll recover, and these guys, they need to entertain me because I'm bored at home. But if it were us, would we risk getting COVID-19 and going out there and traveling on planes and buses and everything else and being in locker rooms with a group of people from all kinds of different backgrounds and different areas? The answer probably would be maybe not so fast. And then there's always the, well, yeah, but these guys opted out. Yeah, Tardif's on the front line. But, yeah, he got $150,000 to opt out. Yeah, I can't opt out of my job making $11 an hour or I don't have a roof over my kid's head, which is a fair point.
Mm-hmm.
No question that's a fair point. But here's what you got to understand about the athletes. Are they better off than a lot of people? Yes, financially. You're assuming money means happiness. And we got all kinds of athletes that have mental health issues, by the way. So it's not, and that applies to all of society and all realms of life. There's mental health issues. There's health issues you may not be aware of, mental stress and all this other stuff. So, but at the bottom of the line, what we need to remember is athletes are human. They bleed just like you and I. So when it comes to the news, they read the news, they watch the news, they hear the news, they hear the stories, they see the stuff on social media. Who knows what you can believe there. So they're probably just like anybody else. They're a little bit fearful, a little bit scared, a little petrified, a little worried, a little concerned. And then you factor in players that have wives or girlfriends that are pregnant, about to have a kid, or they have a newborn like Marcus Goodwin. And you're like, hey, I'm not going to risk my child. I'm not going to risk my wife during her pregnancy or my girlfriend during pregnancy or I've got parents that have some health issues that are older. I don't want to risk putting them in harm's way. And so here's the question you got to ask as a player. And let's just focus on the NFL, for instance. Let's focus on the NFL. Nate Solder, by the way, who used to be a really outstanding lineman for the Patriots, now he's with the Giants. If I heard this correctly, he walked away from $9 million yesterday. He's opting out because of the COVID-19, which he has the right to do. And so when you sit there at home on your Barca lounger or your couch or wherever you are, and you're sitting here and going, oh, these players, I mean, they just suck it up and play. I mean, we need entertainment, so forth and so on. Think about this for a second, because a lot of people will say, well, they're the best athletes in the world. They're in great shape. Are they? Are they in great shape? Yeah, for the sport they're playing, they are in shape. So think about this for a second. What is the landscape via COVID like in the town in which that player resides? So let's say the Chiefs in Kansas City. And is staying home with his family in their best interest? What is it like in the city in which he will be playing? Let's say the Chiefs go to Foxborough, you know, or they go to Denver or Dallas or wherever they may go. Houston, of course, Houston's coming to Kansas City. They go to Arizona to play the Cardinals. Or if they want to go to Jacksonville and play the Jaguars, those are all hotbeds, Texas, California, and Florida, so forth and so on. So what's it like in a city in which the player will be playing and practicing? Is he considering expanding his family? Do those he lives with have conditions that make them more vulnerable? How much do I have saved financially? How much have I earned? How much can I earn if I don't opt out? How realistic is the chance that my team wins anything of significance this season? Let's stop there for a moment. If you are a member of what's a bad team from last year? The Bengals aren't great.
Yeah.
I mean, got Joe Burrow, number one pick. If you believe you're not going to be any good, does that probably help you opt out?
I would think so.
I would think it would be a contributing factor. We all stop being paid if, when the league shuts down due to COVID. So what is it worth subjecting myself to play a quarter or half NFL season and get a quarter or half of my paycheck? Is it worth the risk? For anyone who makes his living around the line of scrimmage or plays a position in which contact is constant, the risks are even higher. Expect several more offensive and defensive linemen to opt out of this upcoming NFL season. Many linemen are considering it, given that those over 300 pounds, which is about every lineman, and diabetic are at greater risk with this virus. The rates of infection are higher in the African-American community. Keep that in mind. Of course, we have many players are African-Americans in the NFL and in all sports. Anyone with a history of asthma or respiratory issues will undoubtedly consult with their doctor before making such a huge decision on whether or not to play. All right, the opt-outs were collectively bargained for a reason. Keep in mind that no one is gaming the system. There is nothing to be gained financially by staying away from the NFL in 2021. The stipends are repaid, contracts toll, so no one gets closer to free agency, and duh, the player gets a year older in a sport where youth is everything. So players don't owe anyone really any explanation. They know their situation. If they're not comfortable playing and they decide to opt out and pass on money and give up a year of their career in their prime, then that's their choice. Why do we have to get all mad about it?
That's the way I feel about it. You know,
you're still going to have football. It's just not going to be all the players you might be accustomed to seeing. It's still entertainment, is it not?
It should be.
I would say it is. Now, what people are really going to freak out is if some star player like Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Drew Brees or somebody like Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, somebody like that, Ezekiel Elliott suddenly just opts out.
Because
we haven't had that big star yet that's opted out, but it could be coming.
I bet you it probably will. At some point, there'll be somebody.
Yes.
That would fall in that category, I think.
Yeah. And what about the Chiefs? Do you think there'll be another player or players that will opt out with the Chiefs, even though they've got a situation where they could repeat as Super Bowl champions? Their chances of winning are very high. They're the odds-on favorite. So that issue about, hey, is my team going to be in good this year, factoring in, that doesn't factor in for the Chiefs. In fact, it would factor in as in help people to maybe leaning towards opting out, but yeah, gosh, I got a chance to get a ring.
Yeah,
I'm going to stick with it, or I'm going to wait longer before I opt out. I think the Chiefs situation is a lot different than the Jets situation or the Bengals situation or the Detroit Lions situation.
Lions, yeah, somebody like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, listen, I'm not going to say one way or the other if I think another Chiefs player is going to drop out, because I don't know their situations. You know, I don't know all the inside, in-depth stuff about them. I'm not going to say they will and they won't. I mean, you just don't know.
Right, but the question I'm asking is an opinion, and that is, do you think there'll be another Chiefs player that opts out besides the two that I already have?
Just to throw it out, I'll say yeah, because the odds are probably...
That's what I would say. I would say the odds are, and I think there are going to be more and more players doing it, and I think it's going to more and more are going to latch on and say, hey, I'm going to do that too, which may jeopardize having a season if there's enough players.
Oh, well, yeah.
The Patriots have six of their 53-man roster already opting out.
Yeah, I just...
Everybody just assumes there's going to be enough players to play, which, I mean, technically, you probably can grab enough guys, but if you don't have the star players, which... If some one-star player opts out, that could start a domino effect.
Yeah, and when you see what happened with the Marlins, it's just there's nothing that tells me that we're going to go into this thing and just be like, this is going to be a great season, 16 games, we're going to get them all in, and everybody's going to play all year. It's not... I just don't know how to approach it all right now.
By the way, the Marlins thing, let's touch upon that, because, you know, there are people that feel that the media shoves things down our throat, that there's an agenda out there. And I did see a very interesting tweet the other day, and I was like, you know what? That is so, so correct. And it was from a person that follows Major League Baseball for a living and said, listen, let's put this in perspective. The Marlins had an outbreak. Every other Major League Baseball team has not.
No, they haven't.
And the positive test of Major League Baseball, even with the Marlins positive test, is 0.03. It's not even 3%.
No, it's not.
0.003% that have tested positive. So there's been tons of negative results. So we focus on the Marlins outbreak, which of course can ruin it for everybody else, don't get me wrong. But 29 of the 30 teams don't have an issue per se.
Yeah.
The Marlins do. Now, that does impact you. It only takes one or two, as we know, have cases in our community and can spread like wildfire. But it should be pointed out that when people that don't follow things very closely see the Marlins story, they go, oh, well, baseball's got an unbelievable, horrible problem. COVID spread across baseball. No, it hasn't.
No.
It spread across the Miami Marlins clubhouse. That's what happened. Now, could it become a big problem for other teams down the line and have multiple outbreaks? Yeah, that's certainly possible. And so we've got to be careful sometimes where, like, for instance, there was a report yesterday, and the New York Times put this out there, and I know there's a lot of people that are Republican that hate the New York Times, but they might like what I say here. The New York Times put out a deal saying that the University of Texas has the most cases, positive cases of COVID-19 of any college in America. And a person that covers the Texas Longhorns said, yes, they also have 50,000 students. And if you base that off the percentage of students that tested positive, it is not the highest in America. So see how we can tweak the numbers to make it a convenient for whatever argument?
Absolutely, yeah.
We've done that before, and media organizations can do it, and the right can do it, the left can do it, and even people in the middle can do it. And, you know, like this whole controversy about these frontline doctors, if you've seen that, listen, there's no point in responding to any of it, whether you believe it or don't. Well, you can believe it. You can shove it all the way you want. But if you don't believe it and you think that the lady's crazy and, you know, about aliens and all this other stuff, you know, you can try to rationalize with somebody, but it's very simple. If you're trying to make your point to somebody who's already stuck in the sand and not going to change their mind, and it's pretty easy to tell where people stand when they post a whole bunch of stories linking that always fits their agenda. You know if they're way right, you know if they're way left, you know if they're an extreme person, you know if they're irrational or rational. And so there's no, as somebody told me a long time ago, it's a complete waste of time to try to rationalize with an irrational person, okay? So, for instance, if you're going to sit here and you tell somebody, listen, actually, Major League Baseball's testing, it's not really been that bad at all. And they keep going back and back about the Marlins. They keep, yeah, I know, but having said that, do you know the overall testing in Major League Baseball is 0.003? Yeah, but the Marlins, okay, I give up. I can't talk to you because you're stuck on one focal point, and that's all you're going to focus on because that helps your agenda that you want sports to die. You want baseball. You think it's great that baseball's having this issue because you predicted it and you want to be right, you know? And it's the same thing with universities. Oh, yeah, Texas has a problem, so we're going to report that Texas, which is true, they have the most cases of COVID-19 on their campus or among the students population, whatever it is that they reported. Okay, that might be true, but what you leave out is that Texas has 50,000 students. And if you base it on the percentage, it's a lot lower. It's the same way when we put out 150,000 deaths in America, which is today's number, because, you know, every 10,000, we make it like it's a birthday celebration. 150,000 cases. Okay, but what we don't say at all during that whole thing is how many people have recovered in this country. We don't hear that number. And we also don't know how many of the 150,000 actually were truly because of COVID-19, because we've seen all kinds of stories where COVID-19 was, well, you test positive, they count as a COVID death, even though you had pneumonia or lung disease or whatever else. Or in one situation, a guy crashed a motorcycle, died in a motorcycle accident in Florida, and they called it a COVID-19 death. Now, you tell me how the numbers aren't skewed a little bit, if that is true. Once again, I don't know what to believe. That could be a made-up story for all I know.
Yeah.
But if you figure the death rate and the percentage, or you figure the percentage of people that tested positive in this country, when you hear the big number, it sounds really, really bad, no doubt. But here's other numbers that you don't know. How many people in this country die from a car accident every year? How many people have died so far this year from a car accident? How many people this year have died from pneumonia? How many people this year have died from the flu? How many people have died from cancer? How many people have died from lung disease? How many people have died from overdoses? How many people have died so far from suicide? We don't hear those numbers, do we? Because the only number we hear is the growing number. And I'm not saying that those numbers aren't accurate. I'm not saying they are. I'm not saying they aren't, because I don't know what to believe. And if anybody out there can tell me what I'm supposed to believe and what I don't, then you are one of the smartest people on earth. Because I don't know how you can sit here and rip people's arguments apart and say, that's fake, that's fake, that's fake, that's fake, and then put a link to a story from the UK, and you tell me that's true because it fits your... How do you know it's true? How do you know your... Have you fact-checked your story? Have you done a week of research to fact-check that story to know that that is true? Well, I saw it on Facebook. That doesn't mean it's true, man. And so, getting back to the point, when you see these stories about, well, baseball's got this horrible, horrible problem with COVID-19, they could, but if they get this, the arms wrapped around this with the Marlins outbreak, and if that's the only outbreak, yeah, there's going to be other guys going to test positive. We know that. It's going to happen during NFL, college football. If we have these seasons, mm-hmm. It's going to happen. There's probably going to be a positive in the bubble in the NBA in Orlando. It's going to happen during this restart, which we'll get to in a moment. That's going to happen. There's going to be a positive case in your local schools. It's going to be how you handle it once you know there's a positive case or cases. Is there going to be an outbreak, or is there going to be an outbreak of fear? See, there's going to be an outbreak. There's no question there's going to be an outbreak. The question is it going to be an outbreak of actual COVID-19 cases, or is it going to be an outbreak of fear and pandemonium? And that, I think, is certainly more than likely going to happen. And you've already seen it with Major League Baseball. Oh, my God! Told you they can't have a season. 17 of their 33 players, or 15 of their 33 and two staff members have COVID. I told you they can't have a season. Well, congrats on being right. No, wait a minute. What? Everybody's putting this out there. Well, baseball's over. Really?
No.
No, it's not. Major League Baseball has not canceled a season. In fact, they weren't even considering canceling a season. They knew there's a possibility of an outbreak somewhere. They are somewhat prepared. I don't know if they're fully prepared. I don't know if anybody is. And so we're still moving forward. So then people throw stuff out there on social media. Well, baseball's done. And then people go, oh, they think it's a fact. Oh, so they start telling people, did you hear baseball's over? What are you talking about? What are you smoking? They were playing last night. What?
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to think. It's okay to actually think and not just be read something and take it for what it's worth. And it's also okay to admit that there might be truth on both sides. But that's just the way we roll in America. And that's a big reason why we can't get anything accomplished. And I think it's a big reason why we still have a major problem in this country. It's because we can't get together and work together. We got to point fingers. We got to blame everybody. And we've got our agenda, and I'll be damned if anybody's going to change my mind. And the people that are willing to change their mind or be objective to actually come to the middle are the people that need to be the leaders of this country. And I'm afraid we don't have a lot of that. All right, I'm talking at the very top. I'm talking at the state level. I'm talking everywhere. I'm talking federal, state, local, whatever it may be. Now, I know there's good people at all those levels. Don't get me wrong, okay? But I'm saying that if we could come together as a country instead of ripping everybody apart, you know, the whole Black Lives Matters movement. I mean, people rip it apart, and they talk about all lives matter. Well, no dip, Sherlock, okay? And that's not what they say. When they say Black Lives Matter, they don't mean we don't care about other people. But yet that's how people play it, don't they? It's like, what are you talking about? And I've talked about it before. Remember the unborn. Does that remember we don't remember the dead? We don't remember the people that have died and sacrificed for our country? Well, of course that's not what they're saying. They're not saying we forgot everybody else that's died. Their point is about remember the unborn, about abortion. Okay, but that's not where everybody don't freak out and go off on that tangent, do they? Because there's an agenda. No. There's people that just don't want to believe this or they believe that. And they have their beliefs. And that's okay. It's okay to have your beliefs. But when you're shoving them down everybody's throat left and right, and you don't, or you're not open to listening at all, how in the world do we get anything accomplished in this world or in this country? And it applies to COVID-19. It applies to figuring out what to do. And it does start with leadership. And yes, I am pointing my finger at Republicans and Democrats. All of them. All of them. I'm moving my finger to where I'm going to dislocate my shoulder as I swing my finger and point at everyone. All right? So let's try to understand a little bit more than worrying about our own selfish best interest, okay? So we talk about, I don't want to wear a mask, or I should wear a mask. Or football players, they got plenty of money, why aren't they playing? Or football players, they suck because they can opt out and make a lot of money. Hey, you know what? They have a gift. They've worked hard to get to the pro level. And they've gotten to that point in life. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you don't have those skills. Maybe you have different skills. Not all of us can make $1 million a year doing what we love or what we're really good at. So what do? We're jealous. We suddenly there's hatred towards players and people that we've never met. We've never met them. We don't even know anything about them. Tardif's not a hero. Oh, that's your opinion. That's not a fact. That's your opinion. You know, Tardif, he shouldn't be called a hero. He takes $150,000. Yeah, I gave up 2.6, and he could easily have. Well, Damian Williams, no hero. Well, nobody said Damian Williams a hero. Well, why are these players opting out? Are they scared? Yes! That's exactly what they are. They're not robots. They're people just like you and me. My God, of course people are worried. Now, can you say that we're worried, we're fearful, we're scared because the media blows it out of proportion? You know what? You might be on to something to an extent, okay? Because I get sick of the same thing, top of the news. 150,000 people have died of COVID-19. Okay, that's a bad number. Don't get me wrong. But that's the only number I get.
Yeah.
You don't give me the positive side of things. So is it any wonder that people think negatively if you're always fed negative numbers? If you're always fed the negative stuff more and more than you're fed the positive stuff, what would you be conditioned to have to accept and deal with? And what do you condition? Well, how do you become conditioned to think?
Negative.
So I'm with people that, hey, you know, we aren't getting the full story on stuff. You're not. And you know why? Well, first of all, part of the reason is you only got a few minutes at the top of the hour to cover all the news that's happening in the world. Even with our news, national news, CBS, ABC, Fox, NBC, it don't matter what network. Mm-hmm. You've only got so much time. Now, you've got talk shows that can talk forever with a talking head shoved in front of you, when it'd be better for them to really break down the facts instead of having all this opinion from everybody, and some people aren't even qualified to talk, but they're on TV. And that's on both sides as well. Mm-hmm. So what you have to do is you got to sort things out the best you can, but it is very hard to sort things out when you don't know what to trust. And thus, why is the issue? We don't trust one another in this country. I think there are people that do trust each other, but we don't have enough of people apparently, or in high profile positions, to trust each other to work together because there are other countries that are doing a much better job against COVID-19 than we are.
Oh, sure.
Now, why can't we do better? Aren't we supposed to be the best? That's what we always say, you know, we're the greatest country, we're the best. We're not the best. We're the best in some things, but we're not the best in everything. But there are people in this country that think we're the best at everything and stick our noses up at everybody else outside this world because we've never traveled outside the country and we don't even know that anything exists outside our country. Shoot, there are people who don't even know anything exists outside their county. There are people who don't even know if anything exists outside their town. They don't know anything exists outside their state. They don't even know where the Mexican border is, and they don't know where the Canadian border is. There are people that way. They are. It's called not in my backyard, sheltered. And here's the thing. A virus doesn't see county boundaries. A virus doesn't see state boundaries. A virus doesn't see whether a guy is 300 pounds and an athlete or a 300-pound guy that's overweight sitting on his couch. It don't see whether you're black or white. Mm-mm. It doesn't see if you're rich or you're poor. That's something that doesn't argue with itself. It just does what it does, and it's obviously caused havoc in our country and the world. So now that I got off on that tangent, college football. So we got pro players that are opting out. What about college players? We talked about this before on the show. if you're a college athlete, we really talked about it, if they try to flip college football to the spring instead of the fall. If you're an athlete that's good enough at college football that you are even NCAA tournament, if you have basketball this season and you get the NCAA tournament, you might have guys opting out of NCAA tournament if there's still an issue of getting COVID-19. Mm-hmm. You might play during the regular season, then opt out, or you might see them opt out of college basketball because they know they're going to be a top 10 pick or a first-round pick. And Caleb Farley is the first college player to opt out of the upcoming college football season. And he's from Virginia Tech. He's a corner. He's projected as a first-round pick. He opted out. He's going to spend the year training for the NFL draft. He said he's seen NFL players opt out. He's uncomfortable with playing this year. His parents are in their 70s.
He lost his mom to breast cancer.
Breast cancer a couple years ago. So he doesn't want to risk anything. And he says, I just got to do what I'm at peace with. And to me, this is the decision I have to make to be at peace with what I'm going to decide to do. So he is opting out. He is the first college player. He will not be the last.
No.
And you're going to see this more and more. I'm telling you, folks. You're going to see this more and more and more and more and more and more and more. The athletes are going to opt out, and it's going to be at every level. It's going to be college. It's going to be pro. You're going to see it. You're going to even see it at high school level, too.
Oh, for sure.
You're going to see that. Yeah. You're also going to see if states shut down sports, like I think Illinois did, and I have football in the fall. There's a kid that transferred from Illinois to an Iowa Catholic school, posted on Twitter. I'm going to Iowa now, so I'll play football.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see some crazy stuff.
Oh, no doubt. It's all a fluid situation still. There's not anything that's off the table when it comes to sports and COVID, because it's unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen when. And right. So, you can argue on either side of it how you feel this guy or this team should approach things or that team should approach things, but until something hits that team, you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
You can take all the precautionary measures you want. One thing gets through on one of your trips.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, you could be affected like the Marlins are, and
absolutely
lose six of your games and affect three other teams in the league,
And have a team that votes on not going to visit you to play a series.
And, mm-hmm. So it does. I mean, one side or the other, those things have negative effects no matter what.
So let's go back.
It's going to all sort out with everybody, high school, right, college, whatever it is.
Right, which kind of goes back to the little thinking here is that if nobody knew that there was the coronavirus, but it was just something going around, they would think it's a bug or they'd think it's some kind of whatever, like you said, upper respiratory situation, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd eventually be investigated. You'd figure out there's something to this. But if you did not know that today, you wouldn't have people opting out.
No.
Even though there could be something that the news could be saying, hey, there's so many people that have died, you would if you didn't really know exactly what it is, you'd be like, well, yeah, I'm not going to get that. I'm young. I'm cool. And you probably wouldn't see as many people opt out.
Yeah.
To get back to that original.
It is. And that original question, I know, is a hypothetical, but in the world we live in today,
you would eventually find out.
And even if we don't have a name for it,
right,
some mysterious thing going on.
You know something's happening, and it would get to the public and the media, and people would get scared.
And it gets there fast. Yeah. There's no waiting. There's no wait time. If this was the 80s or 90s, we might be able to, and even before that, obviously, without all the broad scope of social media and everything happening so fast,
mm-hmm,
I think we could probably get away with going a little bit longer with this and doing more things and mm-hmm, and people not disputing whatever's going on.
Right. Hey, this just came down the wire. I know this is not sports related, but Herman Cain, remember him? He ran for president in 2012, Republican, former business executive. I knew he wasn't in good health. He died today.
Yeah.
At the age of 74. So Herman Cain passed away. Of course, John Lewis, they're having all the memorials and funerals for him. Passed away at the age of 80. There's two men that have been very successful, African-American men, mm-hmm, that have been very successful in business and in civil rights and activism and in politics. Oh, I know Herman Cain didn't win the nomination in 2012, but to even be to that level, it means you've been successful somehow, some way. Although somebody could argue that, or you have a lot of money, which that's the scary part. That's a whole different conversation for another day. Okay, so Caleb Farley is opting out, Virginia Tech cornerback. Now, let's go to the financial side. KU, athletic director Jeff Long sent out an email. Now, I have to admit, I'm not a donor, but yet I got an email yesterday. And then I saw people say, he sent an email out to donors. I'm like, did I donate and not know it? Because I didn't donate to University of Kansas. And I have not donated to Kansas State University. In full disclosure, I haven't donated to any university. Other than I might have once to Bethany College. Please don't spread that around or I'll get tons of mail from Bethany College. And I probably, maybe I've donated to Pitt State at one point in time. I've donated to Children's Mercy. I know that multiple times because they helped save my son's life. Or actually Children's Mercy, but also McDonald's, Ronald McDonald House, which was great for us. So I'm, you know, I'm happy to donate, and there's other causes I've donated to, and I probably should donate and be more charitable than I am. But I have not donated to the University of Kansas. Anyway, in an email, KU Athletic Director Jeff Long sent out to donors, and I guess I'm a prospective donor, maybe that's the deal, outlined the department's current financial situation. It's not too pretty. He notes a $2.8 million deficit in terms of annual pledge commitments, and a minimum, and that's the key word, a minimum 20% decrease in revenue. Minimum.
Yeah.
Not maximum. Minimum. 20% decrease in revenue. They have cut salaries, of course, Bill Self and others. Jeff Long's taken a pay cut. They furloughed some people. They pay cuts for other people. I think it's like $10 million that they've been able to cut or save. Or maybe it's more than that. I forgot the whole email. But anyway, Jeff Long gave a long explanation as to where they are sitting financially, which I like that. I think it provides some transparency. Kind of like Iowa State athlete director come out saying, here's the obstacles we're dealing with in regards to if we, here's why we're trying to have a season in the fall and so forth and so on. So that's the update from KU, and more than likely many athletic or many universities and athletic departments are dealing with the same thing.
Absolutely. I can't think of any other school that wouldn't have the same type of situation. You know, maybe it's not 20% revenue loss minimum, but maybe it's 15 right now and it'll get up to 30, who knows. But they're definitely causing, they're definitely issues all over the place with college athletics for sure.
Okay, now, assuming we're going to have a college football season, and of course you have to work towards thinking you're going to have one.
Yes.
The ACC announced yesterday, and this is where, you know, I'm going to hold off for a second. The ACC is going to play 10 ACC games. That means they're going to play 10 conference games instead of 9. And they're going to have and a non-conference game. So now we've gone from originally thinking some of these conferences 9, now towards 12, now back 11. 10 ACC games, one non-conference game. First games will be between September 7th and 12th, one division. Notre Dame will also play a 10-game ACC schedule and be eligible for the 2020 ACC title game. All TV revenue for 2020, including Notre Dame home games, shared equally by all 15 schools. Remember, Notre Dame has a separate contract with NBC for some of their football games. As for the non-conference games each team will play in the ACC, programs are in control of scheduling those contests. However, and here is a very important part, listen carefully, this is the ACC now, all non-conference games must be played in the ACC school's home state. Why is that a big deal? The University of Kansas football team already had one game canceled, and then they have filled it with August 29th date against Southern Illinois. Now they got to play whack-a-mole because now they have another opening. Because guess what? Boston College is from the ACC. Remember, Kay, you went to Boston College last year? Boston College has turned to come to Lawrence this year. That tells me there will be no Boston College at KU football game based on what they just came out with yesterday. So either Kansas is going to have to go to Boston College, and Boston College says that's their one non-con, and KU is going to do that, or there will be no game for KU and Boston College September 19th. But what I can tell you is that game, as of yesterday's ruling or the decision by the ACC, says that KU and Boston College will not play in Lawrence. We know that for sure.
Based on what that says, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, so that game, probably a goner unless KU's willing to go to Boston College a second consecutive year, which if you're KU and a situation with COVID-19, are you wanting to give up home games to go somewhere? I wouldn't want to give up any home games if I'm any university. And that's why the ACC is kind of doing what they're doing. Now, on the second part of that, Notre Dame finally has a conference in football, but albeit 1 year because of the situation. I have never fully understood. I guess I understand it. It's a money thing. Notre Dame apparently can make more money being independent and still get the best of both worlds without. It's like Notre Dame has their foot in two pools of water, but they never have to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get money from both pools of water. So they got the clearest water in all the world. There's no muddy water. They don't got pond water. They've got this picture-perfect, bright, clear blue water. And they can put both feet in it. And there's times where they can kind of jump in one and then kind of jump in the other, but they just don't have to stay there. They can mosey wherever. They can go to any pool and ocean in the world. They have unlimited access. And it's because of Notre Dame name, whether it's because it's a Catholic institution. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I would say probably so from what I've told or talked to people about. And, of course, it's a tradition of Notre Dame football. Though I'll argue Notre Dame football hasn't exactly been that stellar the last 15, 20 years. But it is a brand name. That's what it is. It's a brand name, okay? And Notre Dame, you know, they are in the ACC in basketball and other sports. But football, they are an independent. For this year, they will be part of the ACC. And, I think that helps, obviously, Notre Dame. And I think ACC is doing this because they hope Notre Dame will say, hey, let's just be a full-time member of the conference. Do you think that's going to happen?
Not in the near future.
I agree. So once again, Notre Dame gets the best of both worlds. Notre Dame, you know, we're having problems scheduling these things with these leagues. Hey, the ACC, can you come to our rescue? Oh, okay, great. And it helps ACC money-wise, and it helps Notre Dame in this situation. But as soon as this year's over, if we go back to normalcy next year, Notre Dame's not going to be a full-fledged member of the ACC. Some people are making stories and saying that they should. And I don't know all the particulars, but there's probably reasons. I would guess there's been some really good reasons why Notre Dame hasn't been in a conference as a football member ever until this point. I don't see why they're going to change next year if things go back to normal.
I have three letters that are the reason. NBC.
Well, sure.
And they're paying them all that money.
And right.
That's why they're not in a conference.
Right.
That's the answer to that question.
Right. And their own deal.
If NBC ever says goodbye, it's whoever else wants to pick it up.
Yeah, and somebody else will probably.
Yeah.
And they'll still have, once again, they'll have two people to wait and serve them, Notre Dame. So they got it. They've got it good. Now, here's the thing I was holding my...
I figured it was the Notre Dame thing.
No.
We're just used to that part now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It is what it is. I'm not going to lose sleep over Notre Dame, you know, having an unfair advantage. You know, I still think there's no way they should be eligible for the National Football Playoff if you're not in a conference. I think that's hogwash. But anyway, I digress. That's a topic for another day if we're bored. Here's the problem I have, and this is where I might get riled up just a little bit. What's the Big 12 doing? Like, what's the Big 12 doing? Like, I don't understand what the Big 12 is doing. I don't know if I ever understand what the Big 12 is doing. Bob Bowlesby, I think, is a respected commissioner, but maybe not. Maybe he's a laughingstock. I don't understand what the Big 12 is doing.
He's just so much better than the guys that were there before that.
Well, he's better than Beebe.
He's just better.
I guess. Okay, so let's think about this for a second. Let's go through the Power 5 conferences. The Big 10, first one to announce, hey, no non-con games. So they're a proactive, right?
Yes.
Let me stress that word, proactive. The Pac-12, in a way, was reactive, but still proactive, and they did the same thing. So now you've got the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC. And the ACC yesterday makes their voice heard. They said, here's what's going to happen, which affects some Big 12 teams and their schedule. And I still think the Big 12 is just the SEC's lapdog sometimes. And I think the Big 12 is sitting here waiting on the SEC. And as you wait and you wait and you wait and you wait, you are what? Left holding the bag. And that's why the Big 12 almost got blown up a few years ago. Mm-hmm. It's why teams got poached from the Big 12. It's why teams still get continuously tried to being poached, like Texas and Oklahoma. And the Big 12 always seems to be behind the curve. And now you've got conferences and only go to 10 conference games. Well, there's a problem in the Big 12 because you only have 10 teams.
Yeah.
So you can't play 10 conference games. And now you do normally because you have a conference title game, so two teams play 10 conference games, but not everybody. You can't. You're not going to.
No.
Why would KU and K-State play twice and everybody else once? That ain't going to happen. Now, that might be good for the rivalry, but that ain't going to. Or KU just gets pounded again. It ain't going to happen. You know, we know that. So what do we got? The Big 12 media days are Monday. And Bob Bowlesby said that they're working on a plan that they were going to talk about Monday. Shouldn't we have this figured out before Media Day? Shouldn't we have the plan figured out as to what you want to do? Because here's the thing. The Big Ten has a plan. It's pretty simple. You eliminate non-con games.
Mm-hmm.
The Pac-12 has a plan. You eliminate non-con games. The ACC now has a plan, and it's not really complicated either. We're going to go to 10 conference games and add one non-con, but it's got to be in ACC territory. We ain't traveling to Lawrence or Manhattan or Norman, Oklahoma. Sorry, they all coming to us. And if you don't come to us, then maybe there is no non-con, but we still got 10 league games, right? And we're going to have a conference title game.
Yeah.
So they've been proactive. They figured this out. The SEC is talking about it. It sounds like the ADs are going to approve 10 league only games as ACC allows non-conference matchups. So the SEC might not have a non-con, but they're going to have 10 league games according to all reports that the league, the SEC, which is considered, whether you believe it or not, the most popular or most important league in all of college football, that they're moving closer to playing a 10-game conference-only slate for the 2020 season, which means they will have no non-con. So let's go back. The Big Ten, no non-con. The Pac-12, no non-con. And they may work to get to 10 conference games as well. They've got enough teams, they can do that. Both those leagues do.
Mm-hmm.
The ACC, 10-game league schedule plus one non-con. The SEC, 10-game league season, no non-con. What's left for the Big 12 to do? Oh, that's right. The Big 12's
add
left
games.
Holding the bag again. Yeah, add games against who? Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
Ball State.
We can't
teams
play, but we're going to get it to 12.
We're going to, yeah, the Big 12. Well, we're going to get to 12. You're going to have to come up with three non-con games, and you can't play any ACC schools on your home field. You can't play any Big 10 schools. You can't play any Pac-12 schools. And now you're not going to be able to play SEC schools. So who are you going to play?
Yeah, regional FBS or FCS schools. That's all that's
left. That's all that's
left. If they're gonna have their seasons, and if they're gonna do the like KU,
are you gonna find what? Are we gonna find? You're gonna find Connecticut, Memphis.
Yeah.
Who are you gonna play?
Yeah.
So the Big 12 once again is left to hold in the bag. Well, they can't go to a 10-game league season because they only have 10 teams.
Yeah.
That means 9 league games. So now they're sitting there thinking, well, maybe we can get to 12. Now you're going to have three not good non-con games, unless you already got one scheduled to go to an ACC place. You might keep that. I don't know if any universities have that in the Big 12. But here's my problem with the Big 12 again. And maybe it doesn't matter if they're proactive. Maybe they can be proactive and it doesn't matter because all these are going to do their own thing and the Big 12 is always holding the bag because they only have 10 member schools. In this situation, only having 10, it cost them a chance at a national championship a few years back because they couldn't determine a true champion. And having 10 schools now, I mean, I like the round robin myself. I like that you can say it's a true champion. You play everybody. I do like that. But at the end of the day, the Big 12 is not at the top of the power struggle here in college football.
No.
And college football runs everything in college athletics. We know that. 80% athletic budgets on average come from football. So the Big 12, to me, out of the five power conferences, is sitting here at the bottom. Even below the Pac-12. Everybody would say the Big 12 is better than the Pac-12. The Pac-12 at least has more than 10 members, and they can actually go to a 10-game league slate if they change their mind and go from 9 to 10, which probably will happen. So you're going to have four of the five power institutions or four of the five power conferences. Every Power 5 conference except the Big 12 is going to go to 10 league games. That's what's eventually going to probably happen. The Big 10 and the Pac-12, I think, will go to that. And if they don't, they're still not playing non-con. And the Big 12 is going to be left with who's K-State going to play in the non-con. And, you know, KU's got, they're going to do New Hampshire. Now they got Southern Illinois. And Ball State's going to play Iowa State now. I know getting games, at least you have some kind of game you put on TV. And the Big 12 could have, I mean, if there's no games the first couple weeks of the season, you could have Ball State, Iowa State somehow being a primetime TV game because there's nothing else to pick. I guess that maybe that could help you a little bit. But long term, when you look at the whole landscape of college football, I just, once again, to me, maybe, am I wrong? The Big 12 seems to be holding the bag and the last one to do something.
Yeah. If the SEC thing pulls through and goes all the way through to the 10-game thing, K-State's going to lose a non-con because they've got Vanderbilt coming to,
there you go.
To Manhattan. So,
so that
Buffalo,
that
North
kills
Dakota,
a gate
and Vanderbilt
game.
Are their non-con games.
So you're going to replace the game with Vanderbilt with somebody probably not nearly as good.
No.
If you can find anybody to fill it.
Yeah.
Southeast Missouri State, you know, I don't know who you're going to play.
It's
my frustration with the Big 12. And then the Big 12 says, well, see, Nebraska's struggling. They haven't been the same, you know. They should have stayed in the Big 12. No. Today, Nebraska's sitting here going, yeah, our conference at least has their ducks in a row, know what they're doing. Let me repeat this. The Big 12 doesn't have a plan yet, and media days start Monday. Don't you think that's kind of an important question that's going to be asked on Monday? So what's your plan? We don't know until we meet tonight. Okie dokie.
Yeah.
Good leadership there. I know it's not easy. I'm not trying to be too critical.
It's
but if
not.
The other Power 5 conferences and other conferences below the Big 12 already made decisions on what they're going to do, why can't the Big 12 figure out what they're going to do?
Yeah.
You know why? Because they've been reactive the whole time. And shoe after shoe drops and drops. And they're like, oh, my God, what do we do? We don't know. What's Ball State doing? Let's get Ball State a call. You agree or disagree?
I'm not saying much because I agree. I mean, it's just like, but again, like you said, it's difficult. You don't know who's doing what. And I think they are waiting on an official thing to drop from the SEC. I thought that the whole time. Mm-hmm. Something official drops from the SEC. Because there are...
But what I like is the Big Ten and the ACC and the Pac-12 didn't wait on the SEC.
Yeah.
And yet the Big 12 is the one waiting on the SEC.
Yeah. And there are actually a fair amount of Big 12 SEC non-con games. Yeah. And I don't know if that's why they're waiting to see what they're doing too.
Because
I'm looking at one week right here where you got Texas.
But you're letting SEC take the lead. Why didn't the Big 12 take the lead and say, we're not going to have non-con games. You dictate to the SEC you're not going to have it. Now, is that going to really hurt the SEC? Probably not.
No. And I think that's probably why. You know, and because I'm looking at this week too. You know, it's Tennessee at Oklahoma, Texas at LSU. Two games there. And then obviously the next week you got Vanderbilt,
Texas
K-State.
LSU can still have it.
What's that?
You could still have it if they had a non-con, but if the SEC goes all league games, then that'll be eliminated.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is the SEC's talking about just league games right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're dropping Tennessee at Oklahoma, Texas at LSU, a very prime game that people are looking forward to. It's going to be, you know, it's going to have a lot to do with, you know, what you make on a TV deal and things like that, that people don't want to drop that game probably if they don't have to, but you're going to get to the point where you're just going to have to do it. You're going to have to make the decisions and... You know, ACC was, I think they were trying to wait it out as long as they could, and they finally just, it's like, we got to do something.
Well, we still await what the Big 12 is going to do. They have to figure something out pretty quickly.
Yes.
I would say. NBA is going to restart today. You excited?
Not really.
I'm not really either.
If my team was... in a better position, I might be a little bit more excited, but it's just not the kind of like what we were talking about with baseball. It's not the same.
It's awkward. I was talking with somebody yesterday and we were talking about it, like, you know, watching baseball is just not the same. There's no fans, there's cardboard cutouts, there's no natural sound, it's piped in, and you can hear the players yell bad words, which is kind of funny, but the announcers, you can tell, aren't there at the stadium in many cases. It feels like it's exhibition games to me. And it doesn't feel natural, and it feels awkward, and I've not been able to get into it. And I said before the season began, I wasn't excited about it. And in the NBA, I'm not overly, I think I'll be a little more excited about the NBA just because I'm going to see, you know, they're going to be on neutral court, they're in a bubble. I think maybe the reason I'm not getting into Major League Baseball is I don't fully believe they're going to be able to finish their season. Because they travel so much. Whereas the NBA, I think there's a chance they're going to get this thing in the books. Now, the question is it going to be an asterisk by the champion? You know, is it harder to win championship in this situation, or is it easier? And it is weird because we had 4 months in between the last games, and now we're going to restart. It is an awkward, weird, unprecedented situation. I am not really super psyched. In fact, I can tell you why I'm not super psyched. I know why I'm not super psyched. To answer my own question and talk to myself between my ears. And out loud on the radio, and that is I forgot all about the NBA restarting until this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm clearly really glued into the NBA and what they're doing. But the NBA is going to start tonight, restart in Orlando in the bubble. And by the way, here's another thing that, you know, we talk about how the media grabs the outbreaks and talk about sports having all kinds of issues. The sports in the bubbles have not had nearly much of an issue. And the NBA had 346 tests the other day and not a single positive. The NHL had 884 tests the other day, not a single positive. But yet that's not the top-of-the-line national news, is it?
No.
I have no idea why. So the Clippers and Lakers play tonight in Orlando, and the Jazz will play the Pelicans in Orlando. I don't know if they're going to stagger some of these times, and that's going to be good for TV, but also they have multiple courts, by the way, so they can play games at the same time. So today it's Jazz Pelicans, and then the Clippers Lakers. Those are on TNT. And then tomorrow the Magic and the Nets in the afternoon. So you can play hooky from work and watch the Magic and the Nets. Although that one's not a national televised game, so scratch that. Grizzlies, Trailblazers on NBA TV if you can get it. Suns, Wizards tomorrow. Celtics, Bucks on ESPN. Kings, Spurs, Dusty Spurs without LaMarcus Aldridge. The Rockets and the Mavericks. That's the schedule for today and tomorrow. 8 games, 2 tonight and 6 tomorrow as the NBA restarts in their bubble in Orlando. And how about tennis? We talk about all these sports and about players opting out. We haven't even talked about tennis. Who cares, you might be saying. Well, I think it's notable that last year's French Open champion Ashley Barty is withdrawing from the U.S. Open in New York, citing concerns regarding the coronavirus pandemic. Why is she a big deal? She's the number one ranked tennis player in the world on the women's side. So the number one player in the world on the women's side has said, I am not going to New York because of COVID-19. Here's what she says, and I quote, my team and I have decided that we won't be traveling to Western and Southern Open and the U.S. Open this year. I love both events, so it was a difficult decision, but there are still significant risks involved due to COVID-19. I don't feel comfortable putting my team and I in that position. She is a 24-year-old Australian who says she looks forward to next year, and she will not participate in the U.S. Open. So there's another shoe to drop in another sport.
Yeah, it's never ending.
It is never
right
ending.
Now.
Every day we're going to, I think every day for like, for weeks now, we're going to be talking or mentioning an athlete opting out if we want to. Now, there could be NFL players, you don't know their names, that we could say to keep the streak going. But I think you're going to see this on our very regular basis. And there you go. Yeah. Tennis is now affected.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way around it. And especially in a sport like tennis where people are coming from all corners of the world to converge right in New York or right in Roland Garros with the French Open, right at the All England Club in Wimbledon. And, you know, they're all coming from all over. And, you know, there's a lot of those individuals that are not going to take that risk. And I don't blame them at all.
No, it's your right to make that decision. It's your body, it's your life, it's your team members,
I'm
your
sure
friends.
Australia as a whole is happy that Ashley Barty's not going to come to New York and come back home.
Probably so. And maybe she got some pressure about that.
And she could have, yeah.
It could be. So there you have it. Just to be an equal opportunity employer, COVID-19 affecting every single sport, including tennis, when it comes to people starting to opt out or not participate. So once again, you know, this show eventually comes back around to the virus. And it, you know, I'm tired of it too. But at least we have some different angles and some different stories today. And it filled a whole show. There's some days I'm like, I don't know what, if we're going to fill a show. Today I knew we had plenty.
Yeah.
I mean, and the big story, if you missed it, is Damian Williams opting out with the Chiefs. Their starting running back is not going to play the upcoming football season. That's the second Chief to opt out, along with DeVarne Tardif, their starting offensive guard. So two of the starters. And the Chiefs have... Everybody's been promoting the Chiefs have 20 of their 22 starters back from last year, and now they have 18. And the Patriots have 6 of their 53 and 4 starters that have opted out already.
Yeah.
I mean, how many more can the Patriots afford to lose before they're not going to be that competitive? I mean, I don't know what the number is, but and it lost Tom Brady, and Gronkowski went to the Tampa because he didn't want to play for the Patriots anymore. It's not been a good offseason for the Patriots.
No, you know, it'd be hard for me to feel sorry for him, but yeah. But no, it has not been a good offseason for them.
So let's recap the show in case you're just tuning in. Damian Williams opts out. He will not play for the Chiefs this upcoming season. A 25-year-old safety, Tedrick Thompson, signs with the Chiefs as insurance for Juan Thornhill. He's coming back from a torn ACL. First college football player has opted out. That's Virginia Tech cornerback Caleb Farley. He's a projected first-round pick. He's not going to play this upcoming college football season. KU notes a $2.8 million deficit in terms of annual pledge commitments and a minimum 20% decrease in revenue. That an email sent out by Athletic Director Jeff Long yesterday. Royals lose to the Tigers again yesterday by a final of 5-4. Major League Baseball suspends Joe Kelly for 8 games and the manager for 1 game for throwing pitches at a player but not hitting anyone. And the Astros, no player suspended for cheating. Wichita Wind Surge lose their team owner, pass away due to COVID-19 complications. The ACC is going to play 10 league games plus 1 non-conference game. That non-con game has to be at an ACC school field or site. Thus, that puts the Big 12 in some limbo there. The SEC could follow suit as well, and the Big 12 is left holding the bag. And the NBA restart is today in Orlando, and the number one tennis player in the world withdraws in the U.S. Open. And as I went back, the Wichita Wind Surge is their team owner, Lou Schweckheimer, who has passed away, according to reports, due to COVID-19 complications at the age of 62. So I think for the most part, that is a quick wrap-up of the show today in case you missed it. If you want to go back and listen to what we had to say, or you don't, if you do, you go to the podcast page at our website, katiecountry94.com, the Sports Ticket Podcast. Share it with a friend and spread the word about the show. And we will talk to you again tomorrow morning on the final day of July. You know, slowly but surely, 2020 is eventually going to come to a close. Thank God.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.